Good evening, everyone. Tonight's class is on Parshas Kisetze. And I experienced a little frustration because I gave a class on this many, many, many years ago, and I figured it would be a very good class to give, and I could not find my notes at all. I remember a lot of it, but, you know, it had, like, the sources and everything, so I had to kind of quickly put it together, and therefore you'll have to pardon my only using the Hebrew source and not the English, because the English takes another hour or two to put together, so I just...
Can you put the English on there, please,
Rabbi? I can't. It takes a lot of time to put these sources together. But most of the people here can follow along in the Hebrew, so and we'll be easy. Now, this class is going to have two parts, and hopefully we'll get to both parts. The first is, I would say, relatively easy. The second one gets a little bit Talmudic, but brings home a very powerful lesson, and we get two parts of a nice complete topic. So Hashem should help us, and we'll get everything done over here. Okay, so we're first going to ask a ton of questions, and we'll start by just reading some of the psukim in Parshas Kisetze. I'm just going to read along, and I'll explain. And if you want to need a pen, write some English, but we'll make it. Well, first story is about the Efas Toar, the captive woman. Says, Kiseitze la milchama al oyevecha, if you will go out to war against your enemies. Now, what kind of war are we talking about? So if you can jump down to source 3, the Rashi, with a little running commentary over here. What kind of war are we talking about? Rashi says, b'milchemes harishus hakasuv medaber. We're speaking about an optional war, not a milchemes mitzvah. There are milchemes mitzvah where Hashem commands us, you have to go, you must go to battle, you must kill and drive out the 7 Canaanite nations. You don't have a choice. But now we're talking about an optional war. So if you go that, so that's what Rashi is saying, again, milchemes harishus hakasuv medaber. Why? How do we know that? Shebilchemes Eretz Yisrael, if it's a battle to conquer Eretz Yisrael, ain lomar v'shavisa shivi. You can't say you take a captive because you can't take captives in the obligatory wars. Why? Sherei kvar nemar lo sechai kol neshama, because you can't let any of them live. So therefore, and you're going to see in a minute, it says you're going to take a captive woman. So we're talking about an optional war. Now, right away, we could ask some interesting questions. What is an optional war? When do we have an optional war? What are the circumstances that will take us, will take such an option for an optional war?
When we're attacked?
No, that's not. That's also another form of milchemes mitzvah, a different type of milchemes mitzvah. When someone attacks you, then you respond. But what's a milchemes rishus?
To gain some land?
To gain some land? Well, let's take a look. I'm sorry to take you to the last source, page 18. The Gemara in Brachas tells us what would happen every day with King David. King David, his advisors would come early in the morning. Nichnasu chach Yisrael etzlo, the wise men would come to him. Amr ladonenu hamelech, amcha Yisrael tzrichim parnasa. Our great king, the Jewish people, the economy is bad. We need parnasa. Now, it's not that they're dying. They're not dying and starving to death. But it's a low, no GDP, you know, or no increase in GDP. It's a lackluster economy. Omer Lahem, he said, well, how about Luchu Yisparna Suzem? He said, let everybody make parnasa from the others. Nah, Omer Lahem, komets maspia saridi, the fistful can't satisfy the lion. Vena bor mismal mechol yosu, you can't fill the pit from the sand that we took out. It's not, the economy is tanked. So what's the solution? Amalem l'chu u'pashtu yedeichem b'gedud. Go out and conquer. And now, if he got the approval, the king got the approval of Sanhedrin, and God with the Urim v'Tumim to say yes. So basically, this was for economics. The economy is not good. And now we can go to other lands and basically say, you know, we're going to take you over because we want your economy. Wow. Do you think that is... It almost sounds like the Jews are imperialistic. That sounds terrible. We're no better than the British.
Yeah.
We're. maybe still are, but whatever. So what is it? And we're allowed to do it. We're allowed to do it. So that already should raise up your antennas. What right do the Jews have to do such a thing? So we're going to put that on hold. Yeah?
Well, that is the same question. Like, why there was no any other option? Why they had
he
to
said another option. He said try to do something internally with the economy. He couldn't. It wasn't working. Everything he was trying wouldn't work. So it's a very strong question. Also, go back to the pasuk in source one. So when let's say somebody attacks you.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah?
Do you ever consider prayer? Or is that already taken?
But praying every day. You know, I'm sure that was...
No, but in this case...
You know, I'm sure they were praying. Governor Mellon was praying the whole time till they were coming. Obviously, prayer wasn't working. Now, when you're attacked by somebody, you respond, then it makes sense to say that your enemy, the opponent is called Oyevecha. I put it in bold. Your enemy. But if you are going somewhere imperialistically, why call them your enemy? They're not your enemy. They're just these people that you want to fleece.
You're the enemy.
You know, it says when you go out to war against another country. Let's say you have a mitzvah to kill them. God says you have to drive out the seven Canaanites. Okay, we drive them out because they are very immoral and they're terrible people. Okay, so they're enemies of Hashem, so they're enemies of ours. But a Mechemes Rishus, how can you call them Oyevecha? Good question. Let's go on. We're not answering anything for a while. Now, and they will put Hashem will put them in your hands. For Shavisa, you will conquer people. You'll get captives. Yud Aleph. And now you see among the captives, Eshavisifas Tor. You see a beautiful woman. And you will desire her. You'll take her for a wife. Well, so you'd imagine it's a really beautiful woman, ain't it? But look down at source number two, the Sifri, the Medrash. Look what the Sifri says on the words Yefas Tor. Ain li ela bezmanchi Yefas Tor. It would appear only if she's beautiful. Minayin afal vishbukur. What if she's ugly?
Well, beauty's in the eyes.
What if she's ugly? What about then? Talmud Lomar, the voice of a chashakta, you will desire afal vishani Yefas Tor, even though she's not beautiful. No, I really don't understand this at all.
Yeah.
Now, listen, do you know guys like G.I. Joe, you know, coming back, you know, and bringing like an ugly woman? You know, why in the world would he bring back an ugly woman? I mean, so that's an interesting point. Why does Sifri even have to mention it? But that's an interesting point. Let's move on. So then the rest we could just say you bring her into your house, and of course there's a whole ritual that's done. You cut off her hair, you make her nails grow. She takes off her beautiful clothes of activity. She cries for her parents for a month of days. And then afterwards, if she's still willing to be part of the program, then you can be with her and she can be for your wife. If after 30 days you still want her and she's willing to convert, you know, and become a Jew, then that's okay. She could be your wife. You don't want her. Then send her away. You can't even sell her. You can't do anything bad because you have Inisa. You have hurt her. You've done something not so nice to her because you took her as a captive slave. Okay, so of course, the obvious question that we need to understand is what kind of mitzvah is this? What's this business? Torah says you could go take a shiksa home? Look, dear, look what I brought home from the war campaign. A nice Moabite woman. I figured you'd like company when I'm away. How in the world will the Torah allow this?
Really?
So the next Rashi in Source 3, the next Rashi, by Pasuk Yud Aleph, says what's going on over. It says, V'lakatul chol ish, I underlined it. Lo dibra Torah ella keneged yetzer hara. The Torah was speaking only against the yetzer hara. She im ein hakodesh baruch hu matira, because Hashem will not allow him to take her. ye son of Israel. He'll marry her in a prohibited way. Okay, in other words, there's two options. If the Torah says, you know, you can't marry a shiksa, finish. He's on the battlefield. He really wants this woman. Oh, the Torah says, I can't marry a shiksa. Well, the heck with the Torah. I'm just going to be with her. Right. Torah says, listen, you know, if we're going to be strict, they're not going to listen. So therefore, since I got a big Yetzirah, so we're going to say it's okay. Avali Nasa, but the truth is, if he will marry her at the end, Sofo Liosona, he's going to hate her at the end. Shenemar, because it says afterwards, the next parsha in the Torah, the next section of the Torah, says, Kisiena Laish, if a man has two wives, one that he loves and one that he hates, and the firstborn is from the one that he hates, and now when he's going to die, who gets the double portion? It's from the one that he hates and not the one that he loves. So you see, he's going to hate her. And then what's the third story afterwards? The recalcitrant son, the Ben Sora Mora, who doesn't listen. And then he's going to have a Ben Sora Mora. So therefore, we connected all three parshios. Parsha number one, taking the captive woman. Parsha number two, having one wife you love, one wife you don't love. And parsha number three, having this rebellious son. So this Rashi, there's a lot to digest. It's from the Gemara. Rashi's not making it up. So number one, what's this idea that Torah is only speaking against the Yetzirah? So I guess this is a very good source for Reform Judaism. They can point to this Rashi and say, even Rashi says, we see that the people can't listen, so therefore we could drive on Shabbos, we don't have to keep kosher, let's just change the mitzvahs, and therefore we could do, and therefore we're not going to make them sinners. So what kind of idea is this? Second issue is the connection of the three. How does the Torah know that he's going to hate her? Maybe he won't.
It's a condition, one of the few conditions.
God said, but how do we know? I mean, the Torah says it because God said, you see, he's going to hate her. Well, why? What's the logic to it? What's the mechanism? Well, you know, why can't a guy... You haven't found any man who married a shiksa that didn't live happily married for so many years? I've seen it.
Yeah.
So what did he... So he took a kavanah, so he took a shiksa. So how do you know for... How does the Torah know for sure not going to honor? And B, how do you know the kid's going to be such a rotten kid? Needs further analysis. Okay, which we're just going to continue. We're just asking the questions now. And that's again repeated in Rashi in Yudal in source 3. V'hoyim lo chavtza, but if you don't want her, hakasim v'varscha, the Torah is telling you, shesofla, so at the end you're going to hate her. So how do you know you're going to hate her? Okay, that's a number of questions, but there's even a more important question that we have to ask. So you figure, okay, I guess if I'd ask you, from these psukim, what kind of person is a Jewish soldier? See, so you figure, he's like a chiloni, you know, not much of a spiritual upbringing. And, you know, that does happen in war. You know, men look to go after women and bring them as the spoils of war. But the problem is it's not quite that, as you see in sources 4, 5, and 6. Source 4 says that before the Jews go out to battle, the officers, the policemen come along and they tell the people, you know, some of you can leave the front lines right now. And one of them is somebody who is afraid. Hayorei v'rach levov. If you're afraid, you're excused. Now, what are they afraid of? So Rashi in Source 5 from the Gemara brings two opinions. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Rabbi Akiva says he's plain and simple scared. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, no, he's afraid of the sins that he has. And the Gemara elaborates, what kind of sin? It doesn't have to be a big sin. It could be a sin that if he spoke between putting his tefillin shel yad and then before he put his tefillin shel rosh on, he spoke. That's already a big enough sin to leave the battlefield. So then, which kind of people are fighting in the battles? You are talking about tzaddikim. You're talking about tzaddikim. The best coil guys you could find. And now what happens? They go to battle, they see an attractive woman, and they bring her home. That doesn't seem to make sense.
Makes sense.
Moreover, if you look in source number 6, in this parsha, a few chapters later on, the Torah tells us how a Jewish infantry should comport themselves. What a soldier should be like. I'll just briefly go through source 6. Ki teitzei machane levecha, when your camp goes out against your enemies, v'nishmarta mikol davar, you should be careful from doing anything bad. Ki v'yebecha ish asher lo yetahor, mikol, if there be a man who wouldn't be tahor, if he had a nocturnal emission, your chatz b'mayim, he should go to the mikvah. If they care about these things. Let's skip to Yudalit, v'yasiti lecha alazencha, you should have a little shovel on your weapons. If you have to relieve yourself, go to the side and cover it over. You know, you got to be, you know, clean. And why? Because Hashem is going in your camp. Will hatzilcha, to save you and to give your enemies before you. Camp should be holy. V'layirvacha ervas davar. There shouldn't be any type of morality on your mind. So we free from these psukim that you have to even have holy thoughts when you're going to battle. So on the one hand, the Torah tells us that the Jewish camp is like a holy camp, and you shouldn't even have bad thoughts. And now the Torah says, well, heck with it. You know what? You can't even control yourself. Go bring the shiksa home. Doesn't seem to fit at all as to what's going on over here. Okay, difficult issue. Okay, then the next story, which I'm not going to spend a lot of time on, it talks about, I don't even put it down, it says then later, you know, when you get old, you have two wives, one you love, one you hate, and the one that you hate has the firstborn child, and now it's time to decide on the inheritance. And you'd like to give the one that you love, child, a bigger inheritance. The Torah says, no. The one that you hate, you got to give the double portion. It's kind of funny. What's it doing over here? This belongs in the laws of inheritance. And Sefer Bamidbar talks about inheritance. What's this doing over here?
That's because it's the firstborn. It's the first son.
Yeah, it gets a double portion. But we already know that in other places. So talk about it. And even if you hate the wife, it still gets open. What is it doing over here? Now we go to the third story, the Ben Sorer Umara, the rebellious son, source 7. Kiela Ish Ben Sorer Umara, if you have a son who is a Ben Sorer Umara, a rebellious son, Einena Shomei Bekol Aviv Bekol Imo, he doesn't listen to the voice of his father and mother, V'Yisro, son, they warn him, V'lo Yishmo, doesn't listen to them. His father and mother, they grab him, they bring him to the elders of the city, come into the gates of his place. They say to the elders of his city, this son doesn't live, he's a rebellious son. He doesn't listen to our voices, he's a glutton, he's a drunkard. So what happens? The entire people of the city, they stone him to death. And he dies. You burn out the evil from your midst. And everyone will see him, be afraid. Okay. Well, what does the fellow have to do to get this punishment? How bad does he have to be? Let's see what Rashi says in source 8 from the Gemara. He says, "A ben sormer en a chayv at sheigno v'yochol tratimar baser v'yishtachatzil v'yayim." Well, he only chayv if he steals a relatively small amount of meat and a small amount of wine, not tons. As it says, "Zolel v'sovei," he's a glutton and a drunkard. Okay, we skip a line over there. So, and that's it. If he, you know, let me just fill in a few details. They warned him once, and then he did it another time. Seems to be a pretty strong punishment. And by the way, this only happens when the kid is just turned bar mitzvah for a short period of time. Now, I guess if we had these rules, we wouldn't have too many juvenile delinquents. But why? Why do we kill him? I mean, what did he do already? He stole maybe $5 worth of stuff from his parents.
That's what he's going to do in the future.
Well, that's what the Torah says. Higia Torah l'sof da'ato. The Torah comes to the end of what his understanding will be. What he's going to start getting used to this. So sof shemachala mamon aviv. Eventually he'll steal and use up all the money that his father has. Umavakish, he'll want to continue what he's used to. Vedemos won't find anymore. He will have made the father broke. So what do you do if you become addicted to your lifestyle? For omei beprashas drachim, he'll stand on the crossroads. Umalastim asabrius, he's going to rob people. And now he's going to rob people. What if he's going to try to stop him? He'll probably kill someone. Retorter says, Yomu zakai val yomu zchayv. Let him die while he's still innocent, and not to die when he is guilty. In other words, with the Torah saying, we can see he's going to be a bad apple. So now this is most unusual on many levels. On many levels. Number one, since when do we punish somebody for what he might do?
Never seen it.
What he might do. And such a severe punishment. Well, you know, the way we see things, it looks like it's going to be that way. So let him die now, an innocent fellow, than a guilty fellow. It's a most unusual halacha. We judge him for the future. That means there's no hope. Well, almost all the rabbis jump on this chazal, and they ask us from the ninth source. The ninth source talks about Yishmael. And this ninth source, by the way, is the reading of the Torah on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. We're told that Hashem remembered Sarah and she had a child, Yitzchak. And then Yitzchak grew up a little bit. He was about 3 years old. Let's pick it up, source 9. Vatera Sarah as Ben Hagar HaMitzris. Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian. Interesting, they don't call Yishmael by name. Asher Yodel Avram, that was born, Mitzachek, he's sporting. Vatomer La'avram, she's Avram, Garei Shama Azos Asra, throw out this maser and her son. Kilo Yirash Ben Amazos, this son's not going to inherit us. Im Beni, with my son, nothing doing. Turn the page. So Im Yitzchak, he's not going to with my son Yitzchak. So, before we continue on that, let's do the Rashi in source 10. What was he was sporting about? What was the sport that Yishmael was doing? Rashi says, many interpretations. Tzach means Loshen Avodas Elohim. It's an expression of idol worship. Yishmael already at the age of 15, he was 15 at this time, he's worshiping idols. And they bring a pasuk for that. Rashi goes on, Dovrach Loshen Gila Reis, immorality. Sporting in an immorality. Gives a proof to that. Dovrach Loshen Rechitz, another one is murder. Whoa. So that's the big three. That's the big three. That's bad stuff. Look at Rashi on Yud. Says, he's not going to hurt my son. Mitshuva Sar, from Sarah's answer, Ki lo yarash ben ha'yama im b'ni, that this son will of the maser will not inherit my son. Atolamid, you learned, Shayamerivim Yitzchak Ayusha, that Yishmael was already arguing with Yitzchak over the inheritance. Va'amar ani b'chor, I'm the b'chor. V'notel v'shem, I'm going to get double. V'yotzei masal, they go in the field to play, the 15-year-old son with the 3-year-old, 2-year-old. V'notel kashto, he would take his bow and arrow. V'yor b'chaz, he'd be shooting arrows at Yitzchak. All right. And then I skip a few words. And it says, V'amar halomas, I'm just playing. We're playing a game. Pin the arrow on the Yitzchak. Attempted murder! Whew! Not a nice guy, Yishmael. Not a nice guy. Sort of had good reason to throw him out, no? Well, what happens? He throws. And Avram did not want to send him out. Hashem said, listen, you listen to me, you listen to your wife. You listen to your wife. And Avram did not, he's a man of kindness. He said, if Hashem says, I have to do it. So he sends them out. And what happens? Well, they run out of water. Yishmael gets a fever. He's desperately ill. He's dying. Hugger's given up hope on him. Now let's go back to the top, back to the source before Yud Zion, right up here. Vayishma Elokim es kol hanar. Hashem listens to the voice of the lad. Vayikra malach Elokim al Hugger bin Hashemayim. And the angel of God called out to Hagar from the heavens. Vayomela, Malach Hagar, what's with you, Hagar? Al tiri, don't be afraid. Kishomalokim es kol hanar. Hashem heard the voice of the young lad. Yishmael must have been praying hard to God. Save me. So Hashem has listened. Now here's that should be the end of the pasuk, but we have three more words. What are the next three words? Last three words? Hashem has heard the voice of the nar. Ba'asher hu sham, as he is there. What does that mean? So let's look at that Rashi in the next source on Pasuk Yud Zion, very famous Rashi. What do you mean? Hashem has heard his voice as he is there. Lefi masim shuosa achshav done. He will be judged on what he's done now. Lo lefi mashu osid lasos, but not what he will do in the future. What do you mean in the future? Vishahayu malach esheres mekachmer, because the ministering angels, the prosecution, Bob Mueller's team of angels, they're listening to Yishmael pray. Save me, save me, save me. And the prosecutor is saying to God, you better not listen to him. Rebbeinu Shalayla, they saw the future. They saw the wonderful Arabs who descend from Yishmael. They see as the Jews are going into exile, and they're thirsting for water, and they're passing by their Arab cousins, and they say, oh, we'll go to our cousins and we'll ask them for a little water. They'll help us. But what did they do? They said, oh, our cousins, here, come here, here, have some fish, some salty fish. Eat something. Okay, they helped their husband, but they were even more thirsty. Here, have some jugs of water. And, oh, I'm parched. And they take the jugs, and it was just empty. Empty. And the Jews die to the hands of their cousins. So that's what the angels say. They see the future. Misha asid zara lahamis banecha bitsama tamala baher. These who his descendants are going to kill your children with thirst. You save him now? Umeshim Hashem answered, excuse me, Ach Shemai, what is he right now? Tzadik or Rasha?
Rasha also.
Nice.
Amrulal, the angel said, Tzadik. Sorry, Alan, they argue with you.
Because he's praying to God.
Amrulahem, Levi Masav Shalach Shemani Donu, I will judge him as he is now. Vizel, and that's what the words are saying. I've heard the voice of Led by Asher Husham, where he is there. Very, very difficult statement. Number one, how could the angel say he's a tzaddik?
Because now he was praying and he was...
Well, now he's praying. Now he's praying. Remember what he's been doing. Murderer. Tempted murder on his brother. Immorality. Idol worship. And the future don't look too good for him. Now, what did we say about the Ben Sora murder? Why did we kill the Ben Sora murder? Why did we kill the rebellious son? For what's going to be in the future.
Yeah, well, he's in
and what has he done already? What has he done already?
He's already done this.
How bad was it? What? No, I'm saying the rebellious son, what does he have to do to get killed? To steal 8 ounces of wine? A little piece of steak. Oh, we see what's going to happen with him. Shmuel. Oh, you don't know what's going to be in the future. You know, just what do you mean? The future is going to kill people. Let him go. Very, very difficult question. Okay, so these are all the questions. Let us begin to... now, there's many people who have answers to this last question, but to make sure I get the whole class in, I'm just going to skip over all those and come to a very interesting answer they saw first time many, many years ago in the Sefer Ela HaDvorim from a Rav Eliyahu Schlesinger. yes, who lives in Israel. And he gives a very important fundamental answer. And we could base it, it's interesting, there's a Yalkut in Source 11 that says a fascinating thing. Dalet Shoymim Hein. There are four types of people who hear things. Yesh Shomea V'Hivsid. There's those who listen, and by listening they lose. Yesh Shomea V'Nisker. Those who listen, and by listening they profit. V'Yesh Lo Shomea V'Hivsid. There's those who don't listen and lose. V'Yesh Lo Shomea V'Nisker. Those who don't listen and they profit. Well, anyway, I'm not going to go through all four of them, but two of them are interesting. There's the one who listens and profits. Shomei Aven Iskar. Who was that? That was Avram. Because Hashem said, whatever your wife tells you, do. That's the story. He listened. And he gained, because what happens? Hashem said, Yitzchak's going to be the descendant. Not Yishmael. So he listened and he profited. Who's the one who doesn't listen and loses? That's with the Jewish people. It says, "V'lo shomo elai." They didn't listen to me. "V'lo hotnu es oznam," and they didn't give their ear to me, and they lost because they would die. So, what do we see over here? We see that a very, very important tool for a person to have is the ability for a person to listen. Taking an ear and listening, and not just listening, but hearing the message, letting it integrate, willing to hear the message, and to think about it, and if it makes sense to even listen to it. This is the only hope for a person to ever do teshuva in his life. We're in the month of El. It's time. This is why we're going to see why we read this parsha now, right 3 weeks before Rosh Hashanah. One of the key components to tshuva is what's called shmiyat ha'ozen, your ear listening. And if a person is incapable of hearing, there's no hope for this person to ever do tshuva. That's a critical point. And there's many midrashim that talk about this idea. For example, we're jumping to source 15. The Medrash says, "Shimu uschin afshechem," based on a pasuk in Isaiah, "Listen and save your souls." Hey, chavivim Yisrael, look how precious the Jews are. Shumafatos of Hashem is trying to convince us. Amar lam Hashem says us, "Im yipol adam erosh agag," a person falls from a roof, "kol gufa loka," his whole body is smitten. A million broken bones. Farofe nichna says, so the doctor comes, the person falls, he's got 20 contusions, 5 broken bones, terrible. But also retia barosha, he has to put a bandage on his head, and on his hands, and on his feet, crutches, this, that, like he's all bandaged all over. V'cholag, that's when you fall physically. But what about a person who, so to speak, falls from a roof spiritually? And you do all the averes in the book. And we know every mitzvah, every aver relates to a different part of your body. So your mom is a big sinner. Every part of your body is damaged. I skipped a line. Ani enika nimsakuris. He's bandaged all over. I skipped a line. Ani, Hashem says, by me, eni atzak v'aseim. El ramach v'erma, there's 248 principal body parts of a person. And the ear is one of them. And the whole body is filthy with sins, damaged. But if the ear listens, the whole body will receive life. Shimu usachi nafshechem. That's the pasuk. Listen, and your souls will live. So what do you see? That, you know, you could spiritually fall off a roof. And you damage every part of yourself. So you figure, oh, you give out, I've got to bandage every part up. It's going to take forever to get fixed up. Hashem says, no, all you got to do, make sure your ear's working. And if you listen, the entire body can be healed. So you see, the key to tshuva, first key to tshuva is to be able to listen. As I said on Shabbos at Shal Shudas, some of you heard it already, we'll just say it quickly over, very quickly, but it's a beautiful idea. Unfortunately, 40 years ago, there were two boys in Eretz Yisrael who were hiking in the southern part of Israel. They got lost. They had no idea where they're going. And then they were lucky they finally found a train track. So they figured, oh, we'll stick by the train track and we'll just follow the train. It'll take them somewhere. But it was, you know, nighttime, it was dark, they were tired. So one fell asleep next to a little bush, and the other one decided to lay his head right down on the rails of the train. And falling deep asleep. And about, I don't know, an hour later, train's coming. The train sees at a distance the boy on the track. Train's blowing the horn, blowing the horn, blowing the horn, but he was so tired. And unfortunately, he was killed. Now, the question is, what would have saved his life?
Listening.
Just to hear, hear the sound. Just to hear the sound. He would have lived. And how much would he have had to have moved to live?
Just to an inch.
20 miles?
A foot.
A foot, maybe.
Maybe.
Just a little foot, he would have lived, but he didn't. So this then is the idea of the power of listening. So as we come to the end of the year, and many of us have many damages all over, so we want to save ourselves. There's only way that you can begin to do tshuva is if you're capable of listening. And now we come to the critical point over here. What do we know about Yishmael? Yishmael was called Yishmael. Ki shama Hashem, because Hashem heard the prayers of Hagar. Yishmael will be a person that will cause the Jews to pray. Shema is part of his name. To hear. Kael, the voice of God. Yishmael, he will hear God. That's his name. Yishmael, he will hear God. But wait a minute, he's a rotten bum. True, he's a rotten bum. But if you look really carefully, who really is Yishmael? When he was born, before he was born, he says, and you will call the child Yishmael. It's called Yishmael. Every other time when you see an inference about Yishmael, he's never called by name Yishmael. For example, let's go back to source 9. Vatera Sarah es ben Hagar HaMitzris. He's not called Yishmael. He's called the son of Hagar the Mitzris. Right? And then if you flip it over, Yud Zayin, Vayishmael Elkim es kol hanar. Hashem hears the voice of Anar. All the time when it talks about Yishmael, when it talks about, if he's misachek and he's doing averus and things like that, it keeps on always calling him the nar or the son of the servant or something like that. Okay. Right? When it says she saw that he was misachek, he wasn't called Yishmael, it was called Ben-Hagar HaMitzris. Yishmael was a person who could be influenced by things. He did things that were bad. But here's the question. Was that the real Yishmael? Was that the real Yishmael? Aren't there times in your life when you do certain things that are not probably the best things you should have been doing? But is that who you really are? Or maybe you just did it like for a lark. You know, let's just see what it would be like. Let's try it out. You know, let's see what marijuana is like. What would it be to do something, you know, whatever. But is it who we really are? And what the Torah is telling us about Yishmael, Yishmael, Yishma, he will listen to God. He will listen to God. Mistakes, we all make mistakes. And Yishmael made a lot of mistakes. He made a lot of mistakes. He wanted to kill Yitzchak. Yeah, but you know, that was being the son of the maid servant. You know, Hagar was a nice woman, a good one. She wasn't Sarah. So it could be, you know, he didn't have such a good mother. Maybe that's the reason why he wasn't so good. He was a nar, he was young, an adolescent. So he did averus. You know, what does Torah say? That a person does, any one of us, we don't do an avera unless a ruach shtus enters into our, a spirit of insanity comes through us. So whenever we do avera, is that who we really are? Is that who I really am? It's not who I really am. It's, you get caught up in the moment. So now this childish prank for his life. They're just saying, what are you going? He's a rotten bum, this and that. What's he's going to do to the Jewish people? All that. Shashem says, right now, is he a tzaddik or a rasha? So what do we mean when he's a tzaddik or a rasha? So what Hashem means, can he be a tzaddik? Can he listen? And the Malachim says, yeah, he could listen. He could listen. Yes, he may, from him may people who kill the Jews. That's true. But can he listen? Now let's give you a few proofs. Do you have any proofs that Yishmael could listen? I'll bring you three. Two inside and one outside. When Amram dies, in source number 12, look at how the Torah writes this, who buries him. Now, this is the second and only other time we're going to see his name. Vayikra Yitzchak v'Yishmael. Who's named first? Yitzchak. When Avram died, who buried him?
Yitzchak and Ishmael.
When Avram died, who?
Yitzchak.
I'm sorry, let me back that up. I didn't mean that. I just asked that. I mean when Yaakov died. Or better yet, when Yitzchak died. When Yitzchak died, was Esav and Yaakov. But it's Esav before Yaakov. Here is Yishmael, Yitzchak before Yishmael. Why? Rashi picks some of this from Chazal, source 13. Mikan she'asa Yishmael teshuvah. We see from this Yishmael did teshuvah. The holy Chazal, he let Yitzchak be in front. Torah says that he did teshuvah. As bad as spelled is, he did tshuva. Let's give another example. Source 14. Vayeshev Amidbar Paran. This is after he lived. He survived the thirst. He sat in the desert. Vatikach lo ima isha Mishraim. And his mother gave him a wife from Egypt to marry. And he married her. Now I want to ask you. When you decide to get married to somebody, if your mother would tell you, I got this girl I want you to marry. Mm-hmm. What would be your general response?
Get married.
What? No! No! This is my most important thing in my life. I'm not listening to you. But you see that Hagar brings him a wife and he takes the wife. He listens. Turns out that the wife that Hagar gave him was not a good wife for him. There's a midrash, I didn't have time to put it in. There's a midrash that says, you know, many years after Yishmael lived where he lived. So one time Avram decided to visit his son Yishmael. So he comes to visit Yishmael, and Yishmael's not home. And his wife's home. Now, Avram does not introduce himself as to who he is. He says, is your husband here? No, he's out hunting, whatever. And this woman doesn't offer him a seat, doesn't offer him, maybe you're thirsty from such a big journey. It's not very hospitable. So he says, can you do me a favor? When he comes back, can you pass him a message, please? He says, yeah. He says, tell him that he has to fix his door. His door's broken. He leaves, Yishmael comes back. He says, you know, this old man came. What do he look like? Oh, this and that. Do you say anything? Yeah. He said, you got to fix your door. Yishmael knew that this was his father, Avram, and his father was hinting to him, divorce this woman. And he divorced her.
Was that his only wife?
His only wife. Then, a couple years later, Avram comes back again to see Yishmael. Yishmael's also not there, but he's remarried now. And this woman says, would you like a drink of water? This, that, takes care of him. So then he says, can you give a message to your husband? tell him the door's fixed. Now, I would say, of all areas in life, if your parents want you to listen, it would not be who you should marry. Because that's your whole life depends on. We see the Yishmael was willing to listen. So yes, Yishmael, yes, has a Yetzirah, no question about it. He's capable of doing Averos. But he is capable of listening. And if you're capable of listening, what did we say? That can fix everything up. There's a fascinating medrash. I couldn't locate it to put it down. The medrash says, in the future, people are going to wonder about people who were the ones who listened to Hashem. Oh, no, or they're going to be wonder about Hashem's actions. And they're going to say, who's this lowlife who didn't learn Chumash, didn't learn Gemara, and now in the world to come, he's sitting with the biggest rabbis, with the Mashiach. Who is this nobody? What's he doing over here? And Hashem will say, what are you wondering? This fellow merited only because he listened to me. As it says in Source 16 of Mishlei, Ozen Shoma'as Tochachas Chayim, the ear that listens to the rebuke of life, Bekerav Chachamim Tolim, he will reside amongst the wise men. The ability to listen. That's the key to tshuva. Now let's look at this Ben Sorer Morer. Go back to source number 7. Look what I've bolded 3 times in the course of the psukim. You'll have a rebellious son that's a nena shomer. He doesn't listen. And they warn him, v'lo yishma, and he doesn't listen. And they tell his agents, nena shomer. They're not saying we have a son who's a robber and a crook or this. That doesn't say that anywhere. Wait a minute. If what he did that makes him guilty is what he stole, why don't we say he's a ganef? All they only say, he doesn't listen. What's going on? The answer is, that's it. If you can't listen, there is no hope. Yes, we normally would never judge someone in the future. How can you know what the future is going to be? He could be better. You don't know what's going to happen. Yishmael, yeah, he did a lot of bad things, but right now, well, the future, we can't look at the future. What is he now? Now he listens. He's capable of listening. We judge you right now for what you can listen for. But the Ben Sora Mora, who's not capable, does not want to listen. So what kind of hope is going to be for this fellow? And therefore the Torah says, yes, we even will kill this, because if a person can't listen, he's as good as dead. Now you understand exactly why we read the Torah portion of the story of Yishmael on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. Because when we read the Torah portion right before we blow the shofar, and the bracha, I'm blowing a shofar, Asher Kesher Mitzvado, Lishmoa, Kol Shofar, to listen to the voice of the shofar. And you know what? Like we said about the boy on the train tracks, the Rambam says, we blow the shofar to wake us up, to listen. So it's not just that you're there and the shofar's blowing, you got to hear the message of the shofar. You got to hear the message of the shofar. So we read a Torah portion to show you how important it is to hear the message of the shofar. Because Yishmael was full of averos and should have died. But he prayed to Hashem, and Hashem says, you know what? He's a listener. I'll give him another chance. Even though he may be bad again, I'm going to give him another chance. Because you know, at the end of the day, he'll probably come around. And he did. And that's what Hashem wants us to hear before we hear the shofar, to show how important it is to hear the message. And 3 weeks before Rosh Hashanah, Hashem wants us to hear about the Ben Sora Mora who doesn't listen to the message. And if you don't listen to the message, the train is going to run you over. There's nothing to talk about. That's the end of part one. Okay. Oh, wait. Oh, I have one more part of question and answer. Now let's go back to our very holy Kolo man who's bringing home the Shiksa. So he said, what's going on over here? How such a man like that bring home a Shiksa? The answer is, you got to realize, no one is immune from Averos. as King Solomon says, there isn't a tzaddik in the world who's done good and has not sinned. And even a tzaddik has to be able to listen, to hear the message. And let's think about this for a minute. What are we talking about over here? We're talking about a situation where this wonderful tzaddik, he's going to battle. Well, I don't think anybody here served in actual battle action. Anybody here on a front? It's supposed to be pretty scary. It's really scary. And, you know, they have all kinds of equipment because many of them are not able to control their bladders while they're in the throes of battle. It is loud. It is noisy. The Torah writes, you know, don't be afraid when you hear the clanging of the shields and the hoofbeats of the horse and the neigh. It's noisy. It's tumultuous. And the one thing a person can't do is hear or listen to anything. You're going into battle, your best friend just got killed in a gruesome way. And now, and you just, you know, you're losing it all. You don't have that peace of mind. You don't have that ability. When they say war is hell, they mean it. The worst part of war is you can't keep your focus, your concentration. You can't hear. You can't hear the voice of the Yetzer Tov. So even though before you went to battle, you're a tzaddik, and before you went to battle, you didn't even talk between your talismans, that's when you were in shul, you were home, you could listen. But now when you're in a different environment, you're in the battlefield, you can't listen. So the Torah knows, well, listen, he's normally a tzaddik. He's normally a tzaddik. But he's going to war, okay? Not his choice. He's drafted, whatever. He has to serve his country. And he's in a situation that he can't really listen. So I understand that it's going to be hard for him to listen now. So if I'm going to tell him, you can't marry a shiksa at all, he's not capable of hearing the message. You see, we can't use this as a source to reform Judaism because we're not talking about a normal situation in life. War is abnormal. War is where you cannot hear anything. So God understands temporarily he can't hear. So you know what? Okay, you could take her. You could take her. We're going to tell you, no, you can't listen to me now. I know when you can't listen. And you come home, 30 days, some good home-cooked meals. You have time to think. Now, 30 days later, now tell us what you think.
Yeah, it's not so beautiful.
And then, you know what? I'm not gonna like her. I'm not going to like her. I thought she was beautiful. But I couldn't think. I couldn't hear. But when you have time to think, then you can get to yourself. And that's why, although he was such a big tzaddik, but it could happen. But that's not the normal way of life. And therefore, he's not able to listen. So when he... And therefore, we have to understand that sometimes when we're dealing with people who are doing an avera and they're, let's say, very nervous, and they're angry, very angry, they just lost their cool, don't start taunting them and telling them, Musser, they can't hear you now. Just wait. He'll settle down. He'll settle down. He'll be able to hear you.
Yeah.
And Hashem, when he judges on Rosh Hashanah, what he really is judging more than anything else is, what's the last time I saw you hear me?
Listen. Okay.
When was the last time you listened? So how about start by the shofar? And listen to the shofar. And all the beautiful message, all the divrei Torah that we've talked about over the years of the shofar, and you listen to what the message of the shofar is. The shofar tells us, the shofar was blown at Sinai, and it showed the Jews were committed to Hashem. It reminds us of the shofar of Avraham Avinu, that he was capable of giving up his son's life for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, listen to that. Aren't you that kind of person, really? Wouldn't you give up your life for Hashem? Think about it. And if you think and you listen, then that becomes the first step to tshuva. And that's the point of Rosh Hashanah, to be able to hear. To hear the message of the shofar, to hear the message of changing your behavior. And if you can do that, then you're going to live. Even if you're going to do avaris, but Hashem knows you can do tshuva. The question, are you a Yishmal or are you a Ben Soramor? That's the question. Now that's years ago I gave this class and we left at this point. Now Hashem, help me and give me a little more information. And I hope in 15 minutes I can do this next part very quickly. And we're going to try to tie this in and probably suggest what would be a way to help us to listen. Mm-hmm. You tell me, listen, but give me some chizuk to, or a way for me to, yes, I can listen. So we still have a few questions we haven't answered about this Mechemes Rishus. So we asked, since when can the Jews just go and attack countries imperialistically? So the Gemara answers, very interesting. No, I'm sorry, not the Gemara. There's a Mishnah Pirkei Avos, I didn't put it down. It says, what is the proper way for a person to go? Kol shi tiferes lo sel, something that's glorious for the one who does it. V'tiferes lo min adam, and glorious to other people. So the simple meaning is, you do something nice, it's good that you're doing it, and people otherwise appreciate it too. Mesil Yisroel says a little bit more. So I didn't have time to put it down. He calls it tikun achavas hamedinis. He calls it international brotherhood. Mesil Yisroel tells them an idea. There are different countries in the world. And every country, you know, America first, France first, you're entitled to do that. But every country has a responsibility to allow other countries to exist. You don't have to be friends with them, but allow other countries to exist. And how can that happen in the simplest way? Trade. Let's say you have an excess of a certain thing. Let's say oil. The other country doesn't have oil, and they're willing to pay for the oil. And you say, no, we're not going to give you oil. Why? Because we want to see you go down. Well, there's a basic responsibility of the entire world, is that every country should, to the best of their ability, you don't have to make yourself lose to help others. But if you've got extra and you can sell or trade or help, you have a responsibility to do that. And that's tiferes lo min ha'adam. You should be able to share your resources in a fair and equitable way. Countries should be able to get along with each other. Every nation has an obligation to help others to not starve. And therefore, and this is very relevant, you know, you got all these people who are doing what? The BDS against Israel. Because what do they really want? They want to take us down. Why can't you trade with us? You'll do good if you trade with Israel. You'll get a lot of our technology and this. We have beautiful flowers. You know, we get parnasa. You gain, we gain. It's a good deal. We're not trying to overrun you. But if countries feel they don't have this obligation, and this is what David HaMelech is saying, try to get parnasa. We can't. Well, have you tried to trade with other countries? Have you tried to offer to sell them your flowers and your honey and this? They don't want to trade with us. They want us down. So a country that doesn't feel an obligation to help others, they are your enemy. Let's know who our enemies are. The whole Europe is full of enemies. Almost the whole world are our enemies. What do you mean? It's just economics. It's not economics. You're trying to hurt us. When they tell them enough, the economy's not doing well, and there's other countries that we could trade with and deal with, they don't want to trade with us. They're our enemy. Now we go to war. Now we go to war because they're not acting properly. We have a right to exist. We're not asking you to give us things for free. We want to be able to trade and share and this and that. You want to take us down? You are our enemies. So therefore, we're going to go. You don't want to sell? We're going to take. We're going to take. That's reasonable. That's Melchemes Rishus. And we may, and you think they're going to just say, oh, you know, go ahead, take what you want. No, we're going to stop you right at the border. Well, what's going to happen is we're going to end up killing them. But that's already more reasonable, isn't it? It's more reasonable. See, you're trying to lock us out. Man, so all the countries don't want to sell to Israel. Mm-hmm. But we'll get them to service. So you just go to war. So now, let's take it a step further. Let's say we have a court of law and a Bezdin makes a ruling. Bezdin makes a ruling against a murderer or in a monetary case. Says, you have to give the money to this guy and this and that. So they can stay very objective, and it doesn't change who they are, generally speaking. They're honest judges. But over here by war, what's happening over here? Hashem is saying, you have a right to go to war. As a matter of fact, It's a mitzvah now. You have permission, with my permission, to go to war. And this is God's will, because David HaMelech does only what Hashem was saying. Remember, it's the high priest's priestly garments. The word of Hashem says, yes, go out to war. You have my blessings to go out to war. So by war, we may be doing God's will, that he wants us to live. But at the end of the day, after we beat them and take all their stuff, aren't we benefiting from it? It's different than a judge who will render a decision, but he doesn't benefit from it. But here we're rendering a decision. We have a right to attack them and to get what we need economically to survive. They are our enemies, but we're not just the judge, we're also the beneficiary, which puts us in an awkward position, because what happens, as it is, we now become the ones who dominate over them. And we behave imperialistically, although we aren't. That's the difference. You hear the difference? We behave imperialistically, but we're not. But what happens is you develop this dominating personality. We're not going to let them push us around. We're going to go in and take what's rightfully ours. And it's right, and it's a mitzvah, and you're doing what's proper, listening to Hashem. But it makes you into a little bit of a bolder type of a person. So what the Torah is saying, when a soldier goes into a milchemes rishos, Hashem is sending us so we should feel a personal feeling of dominance. And really the same thing happens to a milchemes mitzvah. Even when we have to conquer the seven Canaanite nations, it's the same idea, but there we have to kill them all out. We don't take anybody back. But what's happening at the same time, it's very interesting. By this mitzvah, Hashem is telling us, go, fight them, beat them, take their stuff. Hashem, you're making me into somebody that maybe I don't really want to be. This mitzvah is stoking my yetzer hara in me. Doing this mitzvah of going to war is building up my yetzer hara, that I feel I'm entitled to certain things. You follow what I'm saying over here? And it's very interesting. By a milchemes mitzvah, there is no law of yefas tor. There is no law of yefas tor, because we really don't benefit very much. But anyway, I don't want to get into that idea. But let's just move on. But what is the Torah saying? Rashi is saying, Dibra Torah keneged yetzahar. The Torah speaking against the yetzahar means to say, the Torah realizes that this mitzvah creates a yetzahar. The Torah is saying you have to control. Yes, the Torah did say before, you have to control the way you think, your camp has to be holy and all these things. But when a mitzvah comes along and is supposed to create a feeling of dominance, then you can't control the Yetzirah anymore. And what kind of Yetzirah is this? This is where people make a mistake. Why is he taking the girl from the battlefield? For sex? No. It's not a yetzer for sex. It's a yetzer hara for conquest. Dominion. Often when people analyze why people rape women and things like that, it's not always for sex. It's for power. The Jews are... the mitzvah is making them want power. That's why the Sifri said, even if she's ugly, well, what man's taking an ugly woman? Take an ugly woman because it's all about power. So it's fascinating. Oy, my boy. I'm going to have to skip a certain part. I'm sorry. It's such a beautiful way. I have to skip it. Okay, but that's what's going to happen. He's going to develop this desire for power. Okay. So now, he takes her home. What feelings will he have for her? At the end. Rashi, Chazal, I'm saying, at the end he's going to hate her. How do they know? Because they know why he's taking her.
Yeah,
it's not for sex.
Yeah.
It's for power. When he marries her, if he will marry her, what will happen? He's going to have to support her. Now she becomes a responsibility. Now, of course, what your regular wife you have to support, but you don't hate your regular wife because, you know why? Because when you married your wife, she wanted to marry you too. Right? She wants to marry. She chose you. And you feel a certain respect because she wanted me too. Okay, so I'm willing to support her. It's reasonable. But the Afas told her, she didn't choose you. And therefore, he can never get a good feeling over her. He got her because he dominated her. He doesn't get any love back. So now he realizes, I'm stuck with this woman who really doesn't love me, and now I got to support her. She's become my responsibility. I owe her money. I have obligations. So he's upset about the original decision. Why in the world did I get involved with this? Now, we hoped within the 30 days he would have been calmed down and thought the better of it, and maybe he will within these 30 days. And that's the whole idea, to begin to resent her when now he has time to think about things and to resent her. But if he still won't, then he'll marry her. That's what Torah says. If you send her away, you got to do it nicely because you afflicted her. It wasn't a sex thing. It was dominion. Okay, so great. Very good. So let's say he's married this woman now. At the end, he's going to hate her. You see why he's going to hate her. You dominate someone in a relationship and they don't love you back. You're not going to like that person. Now, what if you have a child with this person? And that's why it says that when you have one wife you love, one wife you hate, that next section, and you have to give the double portion. It's not why. I really don't want to give the double portion because I hate her and I really don't care about the son. What's your feeling about the son? You resent the child. And you resent the fact that he's going to get the double portion? And I really shouldn't have married at all. If you resent the child, you know what's going to happen next? He's going to be a Ben Sorer Morer. And there's going to be no hope for him. That's the source of the Ben Sorer Morer. The child doesn't listen. Why doesn't he really listen? Because he knows his father resents him. And maybe his mother too. You see, Yishmael on the other hand. Let's look at Yishmael's father. Shmuel's father was Avraham. And Avram loved him. He didn't want to throw him out of the house. He only did because Hashem forced him to. And he loved him even though he tried to kill Yitzchak, his own son. So Yishmael sees that his father loves him. And a child like that, Yishmael, that he knows his father loves him, he will listen one day. When he has a father who loves him like this. There's no problem about shame. So for one day he'll be worse than that. No, no. If they love a child, it's not going to happen. We say, no good will come from him when he has parents who resent him. But if a child has a support system, there's always hope. And the biggest proof is, the Gemara says, what happens if he steals the first time and he's warned and he's punished? And then the second time he's warned and he does it. And now he should get killed. And if the last minute the father says, I moichel him. I forgo it. Torah says, you don't kill him. Why? Because maybe now father maybe loves him. Mm-hmm. So that's a big message for parents and teachers, that no matter how bad a child's behavior may be, it's all going to depend how much you love him or resent him. Sometimes we resent children. You're expecting Yiddish nachas from this child, and all you got is headaches and you resent him. Oh, it's a shunt on the family. Mm-hmm. But if on the other hand you love this child, there'll be hope for him. And this is maybe the point we're trying to say. The Ben Sorer Morer doesn't listen because he knows everyone resents him and doesn't love him. Yishmael listened because he had a father who loved him. So what could help us listen on Rosh Hashanah to the voice of the shofar? Hashem's saying, just listen. If you listen, you're going to get yourself out of trouble. Why should I listen? You know why? Because I love you. Because I created a whole yontav Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur so you could get off the hook. And if we could focus on how much Hashem loves us and believes in us and thinks about us, maybe we could hear the message that Hashem is giving us. So that is the real key to the Avodah El. The Avodah El, we have to do two things. Focus on how much Hashem loves us and how much He believes in us and doesn't resent us. And then we could try to listen to what He's saying. And then, Mirtz Hashem, things will work out very good for us. Okay, Shkayach.